This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
The 2024 Major League Baseball season set to get underway. We are in
opening day of the 2024 MLB season. The headline was supposed to be simple. Shohei Ohtani, one of the biggest stars in baseball, was making his debut with the Los Angeles Dodgers, one of the favorites for the World Series. In the offseason, Ohtani had signed a 10-year, $700 million deal with the Dodgers, giving him the biggest contract in the history of North American sports. But the story that captured the attention of baseball fans that day got a lot more complicated than that.
The scandal broke when the LA Times reported that Ohtani's name came up in connection with a federal investigation into a sports betting ring in Orange County.
That connection came through Ipe Mizuhara, Ohtani's longtime interpreter, who was seen everywhere Ohtani went in America. Ohtani's lawyers say that Mizuhara had stolen $4.5 million from Ohtani to pay off his gambling debts, debts that he accrued through sports betting. Now, we should be clear that this story is one that actually involves illegal sports betting. Since 2021, Mizuhara had been placing bets through an alleged illegal bookmaker in California, although he asserts that he thought what he was doing was legal. Major League Baseball is investigating the situation, and we don't know whether Mizuhara would have made the same decisions if sports gambling was illegal, period. But what we do know is that a lot has changed in the world of sports since sports betting was legalized by the Supreme Court in 2018. The sports betting industry in America has grown exponentially, multi-billion dollar exponentially. But so have the concerns.
Four Detroit Lions players, including former first-round pick Jameson Williams, have been suspended for violating the NFL's gambling policy.
Raptors forward Jonte Porter is under investigation by the league following multiple instances of betting irregularities.
The head baseball coach at the University of Alabama fired following sports gambling here and a couple of suspicious bets.
And it's not just in pro sports. The problem goes into the NCAA as well, which we'll talk about in a minute. But is America's sports betting industry getting out of hand, even as it's booming and producing a windfall as well? What is the cost of all the betting going on in athletics? Let's start today with Danny Funt. He's a reporter covering the sports betting boom. He's also writing a book on the topic. Danny, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so I've said generically the sports betting boom. How would you describe how big the industry has gotten since 2018?
As you said, I don't think even gambling's biggest advocates could ever have anticipated how enormous it's grown, how profoundly it's transformed the business of sports. I definitely would recommend taking the over on how big it's going to get in the coming years. Since that Supreme Court decision you referenced in 2018 that paved the way for states outside of Nevada to legalize sports betting, there's been more than $330 billion wagered legally on sports in the U.S. Just kind of an incomprehensible number. And sports books have generated about $25 billion in revenue from that. But yeah, just every aspect of how you consume sports, even if you're not a gambler, has been transformed by this industry. And as states continue to legalize, this is only going to get more inescapable and more controversial.
I want to come back to the transformation that's happened for even non-bettors. But who's getting the windfall from this $330 billion sort of tsunami of cash? It's not just the sports books, obviously, or the leagues, right, that are benefiting greatly from it. Who else is who's getting a windfall here?
Well, some states have certainly generated a huge amount of tax revenue from legalizing this. Others, including Colorado, where I live, have fallen far short of expectations. So that's been a bit of a mixed bag, despite those staggering wagering totals we were just talking about. But yeah, basically everyone with skin in the game has tried to cash in on this new industry. So sports media companies have signed incredibly lucrative deals with sports books. Teams have put sports betting parlors in their stadiums and arenas. former players, as you can see on just about every other commercial, are advertising for these companies. So yeah, everyone wants a piece of the pot. And in many respects, a lot of them are disappointed, despite the fact that it seems like everyone you talk to has, a bet going on a given game.
So the teams have places to bet inside their facilities?
Yes. So in Washington, D.C., for example, the NBA arena, the soccer stadium, the baseball park, all of them have a brick and mortar sports book now, attached to their stadium. The same is true for the Cleveland Cavaliers arena, where there's a place you can go to bet, just outside of where you'd go to watch the action from your seat. And I bring the Cavs up because their head coach, J.B. Bickerstaff, was one of the people in recent days who said how out of hand this has gotten. He was talking about how he hears fans in the stands heckling him when the team is winning but not going to cover the point spread, or he even had someone call his home to threaten him because I guess a Cavs game had cost that person money. So, yeah, it's truly infiltrated not only the business in kind of an abstract way, but literally the places we go to watch sports.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, and then the number of people, right? I'm seeing that the average monthly users of the most popular betting apps, and we should say that my guess is that most people are using the apps to place their bets and maybe not necessarily going to the facilities, say, at an arena or a stadium. But that number of people has soared to 600% to more than 16 million. I mean, is there any way, Danny, to sort of describe who is part of that 600% growth?
Well, you're exactly right. The vast majority of sports betting now takes place online. And you can imagine how nice it is for people who want to bet, at the sports bar from their couch and not have to drive to some casino to place a bet. So that's certainly generating a huge amount of growth. States are cagey about disclosing who exactly is placing bets and how many people are placing bets. But it's no mystery that a ton of this growth is coming from young men who have a propensity to gamble more than the average person. There's been some controversies about colleges letting sportsbooks advertise on campuses. But I think it's clear that the same people who are, such adamant sports fans are, this huge untapped client base for these companies.
Yeah.
Well,
so I want to talk about sort of the cultural aspect of this as well a little bit mm-hmm. later in the show. But Danny, you mentioned that basically every sports news site has a sports betting beat now. And you said that I think even ESPN has its own sports book. There is this perfect synergy going on between the coverage of sports, the playing of sports, the business of sports, and the thrill of gambling, right? And the legalization of sports gambling. And it's brought out some pretty good commentary. There's one that I saw a couple of weeks ago on Twitter from a guy named Jeff Israel 25. And it was spot on. He has this satirical quote where he quoted, "Welcome back to SportsCenter, presented by ESPN Bet. For more on the Ohtani situation, we go to our FanDuel MLB insider Jeff Passan at our DraftKings studio in Los Angeles, brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook. Jeff, how could something like this possibly happen?" End quote. Okay, so not actually a quote, right? He made that up. But I feel like through satire, he's accurately describing something about just how inescapable gambling has become, even just in the watching of sports.
Yes, and as you said, ESPN getting in the game with licensing their name and getting a stake in a major sports book recently is a huge development in that. I was speaking with a former person who worked in the industry setting odds and used to be a professional sports bettor just yesterday. And he was saying that his 8-year-old son sees so many ads, especially on ESPN, to bet now. He felt obligated to walk his kid through, the basics of probabilities and why it's so hard to actually win money on sports. And he was saying, just as I might teach my kid, how to drink responsibly or why cigarettes are dangerous, gambling falls into that boat now. Pretty incredible. It's much easier now to list the outlets that don't take money from gambling companies than those that do. And I would just respectfully quibble with one thing you said. You said basically every sports media company now has someone on the sports betting beat. They certainly have all sorts of staffers promoting bets and talking about all the different ways you can bet on sports. There's actually a pretty shocking dearth of reporters who cover this industry aggressively as they might cover tech or tobacco or any other major sector of the economy. I think we could wonder why that is. The fact that advertising dollars are pouring in must play a part. But as much as these media companies are promoting gambling, I think they're kind of dropping the ball in reporting on it.
Danny, you are very gracious in saying you want to respectfully quibble. You could just be like, no, Meghna, that was a mischaracterization. The truth is there's so much money here that they call it the sports betting beat, but it's not really aggressive journalism at all.
Fair
full
enough.
Stop. I mean, I will take that point very humbly. That's exactly right. Okay, well, we've got just about 30 seconds before we have to take our first break here, Danny. I mean, just let me quickly ask you, for you I'm going to presume you're a lover of sports. I mean, also you live in Fort Collins, so that's, you know, a major sports city in this country. How has betting or sports gambling just sort of changed your relationship with watching or being a fan?
Well, I think, you know, if you're a food critic, you should go out to eat at restaurants. So as a sports betting reporter, I do wet my beak a little bit, but the more you learn about sports betting, for me personally, the more you know it's a loser's game. So I try to keep my betting to a minimum.
Okay. And is it, just quickly, is it changing, do you think? Like, you even just your enjoyment of watching?
Oh, yeah. I talked to so many people who are diehard fans of teams, but if they forgot to place a bet that day, even if their team wins, they seem more bummed out than excited after the game, that's for sure.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to come back to that in terms of how it's changing sports fans as well. So Danny Funt, stand by for just a quick moment. Back in a second. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're back with On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the massive boom in sports betting that's been going on in this country for the past 6 years, and the not surprising boom in sports scandals that have come with it. And the question is whether it's time to reform sports betting in this country. We're joined today by Danny Funt. He's a reporter who covers the sports betting boom, and he's in Fort Collins, Colorado. Danny, we mentioned the Ohtani scandal at the top of the show, which has to do with his interpreter and not him directly, as far as we know. There's at least one other headline-grabbing scandal I want to get some information from you on, and that's regarding the Toronto Raptors' Jonte Porter. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. I would expect your listeners not to know who that is. He's a pretty
I'm gonna jump in there. You never know who's listening. We have huge we got big time sports fans that listen to public radio. But go ahead.
Apologies to his mother if she's tuning in. No. I just say that only because he's a bench player on the Toronto Raptors. You know, he's been in and out of the league, makes the minimum salary, but he made headlines recently because the NBA was investigating two games he played in, one in January, one in March, where he played less than 10 minutes in one of the games. He only took one shot. The first time he left the game with a nagging eye injury. The second time, I guess it was due to an illness. But these forgettable games, you know, got people in a tizzy recently because DraftKings, one of the market leaders, one of the top sports books in the country, flagged that a huge amount of money had been bet on prop bets for Jonte Porter, which means how many points he'd score, how many three-pointers he'd make, stuff like that. And a rush of bettors before the game tried to bet the unders on those props. So now the question on everyone's mind is, was Porter, yanking himself from the game to look out for his own bets? Did someone within the team have inside information and tried to profit from that? A lot more mysterious than known at this point. But it's the sort of thing that people said would be inevitable once you started making not just betting on the game, but betting on every, you know, micro aspect of the game available to the masses.
Yeah. So this is really important to understand. So to underscore, it's not just like you bet on who wins and who loses and by how much. It's basically every aspect of different games. I mean, can you bet on, let's say, with the women's Final Four now, how many, not just points, but let's say rebounds, assists, or even three-pointers Caitlin Clark bags?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And, immediately, it didn't take a gambling expert to realize that this would be so ripe for corruption. I think, you know, you think of like the Black Sox scandal with players throwing the World Series. That might be a little outlandish nowadays, but it's far easier and far subtler to throw how many catches a certain receiver will have in the first quarter of a college football game, or how many free throws a player will attempt, you know, in the second half of a basketball game. Those things, sportsbooks offer literally thousands of prop bets every day. They can barely keep track of who's betting what, and these leagues, I think, are in over their heads on trying to police that sort of potential corruption.
Okay. The question I'm about to ask may sound facetious, but I'm serious. Like, how far do the prop bets go? Can you make a bet on how many drama queen dives a soccer player is going to take headfirst into the pitch?
I wouldn't be surprised at some unregulated sports books. The line tends to be things that are actually part of the game. So as much as we hear about, for the Super Bowl, for example, what color will the Gatorade be that's dumped on the winning head coach's head? At actual regulated sports books, you generally can't bet those sort of things because, of course, some trainer knows, you know, the sort of Gatorade they put in the cooler before the game. So it tends to be things that are actually on the court or on the field that are part of the game. But yeah, the goal is to make basically every aspect of a game bettable. And you can imagine how addictive that is. If I can bet on, you know, not only who's going to win, but will the next pitch be a strike or will the runner on first try to steal second? It turns a 3-hour betting experience into a every 30-second betting experience for some people.
It's like being able to pull the handle on the slot machine pretty much continuously for 3 hours. It's a lot. Now, I mentioned the Women's Final Four in the NCAA. The NCAA is not terribly happy, or leadership is not terribly happy with all the betting that is going on in college sports for a bunch of reasons. One of them is player safety. So in February, NCAA President Charlie Baker spoke to ESPN and talked about this.
Well, the biggest thing is fear. And we actually had one championship where there was a threat made against the team from a bettor that was serious enough that we gave the team 24/7 protection for the rest of the time they were in the tournament.
And by the way, just last week, Baker announced that he wants to ban prop betting from college sports, citing an NCAA survey that suggests about a quarter of Power Five conference schools, the biggest sports schools in this country, have received reports about athletes getting harassed by people with betting interests. So, Danny, I mean, what kind of harassment are we talking about?
It's pretty scary, and it certainly happens at both the pro and the college ranks. Just when we're talking about young adults, they're extra vulnerable. So I can understand why people like Charlie Baker are concerned about it. The harassment might range from going to class the day after a game and the person sitting next to you says, "Hey, you know, your missed free throw cost me $100," to much more aggressive harassment that goes on online. And immediately, once states began legalizing sports betting and including college sports, those sorts of concerns came up. Now, the pushback you get from people in the industry and people who are advocates for as much gambling as possible is that if we ban that sort of thing, it'll just go on illegally through some campus bookie or some offshore online sports book. And when that happens, we won't be able to detect it as easily. We won't be able to, you know, identify suspicious gambling like what we were talking about with Jonte Porter and rush to people's safety as quickly. So it's a bit of a devilish dilemma, but I can certainly see a strong case why college athletes are under so much pressure to begin with to think that they're costing people money on their individual performance and could be brutally harassed for it, I think is definitely something that might merit an intervention.
Yeah, for sure. Is there also a concern on the other side where, I mean, you know, we've done any number of shows about the fact that the, you know, the biggest athletic schools make billions of dollars from their top athletes, particularly in, you know, say football and basketball, that and they, because of NCAA rules, the athletes can't benefit from that really at all. So is there, you know, the possible lure of, you know, corruption on the other side with college athletes?
Definitely. Just last summer, there were a rash of scandals at Iowa and Iowa State with players found to be betting on sports. Just a few weeks ago, a former Vanderbilt quarterback said he was approached by mobsters who tried to entice him to fix games. So there's all sorts of problems that anyone who wants this to go on will have to deal with. Not only players betting and people around the teams betting, but them being extorted, facing harassment. It's kind of a mess. And as you said, they're not seeing the money that comes from sports betting. Maybe it trickles down in some way if more people are tuning in because they have a bet that could raise the potential for these NIL deals that student athletes get nowadays. But yeah, I think it's understandable why they don't want to be subjected to that. Just recently, an NBA player, so not a college player, but I think he made a valid point. He said that prop bets make him feel like a prop. And I could sort of understand why people betting on, you know, your individual performance is kind of dehumanizing in a weird way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've also seen with the, you know, the sharp exponential growth in the money flowing through legalized sports gambling in this country. There are many reports of an increase in gambling addiction, especially amongst the young men that seem to form kind of the core target audience for the sports gambling industry. And before I go any further, I just want to remind folks that if you or anybody you know is suffering from a gambling addiction or even has the concern that that might be the case, there is a national 24-hour gambling helpline. It's 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-426-2537. And of course, if there are significant mental health concerns that are going along with a gambling problem, the number for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, which is free and confidential, is available at 988. Okay, 988, that's the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Well, Danny, hang on here for a second because I want to bring Richard Daynard into the conversation. He's a professor of law and president of the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University. And in fact, when it comes to how large industries target and market to people, Professor Daynard has been one of the leaders of forming the legal basis upon which the tobacco industry was held legally liable for the consequences caused by tobacco youth. Professor Daynard, by tobacco use. Professor Daynard, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here.
So you are challenging the sports betting industry. You're making a case against them, a legal case. What is that case?
Okay, well, it's the first case we brought. I'm sure there will be other cases following by us and by other concerned, attorneys and citizens. This case was, we think it's an easy one. It'll be very embarrassing if we're wrong on this, because this was a promotion that I think is in large part still going on, by DraftKings that said that if you set up an account with them, as you know, as a bettor, you would get $1,000 in, you know, basically in free money. And it turns out that the fine print had some, you know, small restrictions on that. So to qualify for the $1,000, you had to make an initial deposit with them of $5,000. Then you needed to bet $25,000 over the next 3 months. And then when you've done all that, you still don't get the $1,000. It's just credit for further betting. So that seemed to be if there was ever an unfair or deceptive act or practice in commerce, this seems to be a classic case of that, which is the legal standard, or one of the legal standards for holding marketers liable for, basically lying about their products.
So that's a misleading marketing case, right?
Right.
But what really changed the tobacco industry was the successful argument that they were knowingly advertising a harmful product. In fact, that they had ample evidence of their own about the harms of tobacco use, and that they were marketing it to not just everyone, but including, you know, kids. Is there anything similar that you're seeing in the sports betting industry?
Well, I think there's everything similar. The marketing is, you know, clearly, as Danny was saying, it's, you know, clearly aimed at young men, and, you know, young doesn't, there may be age limits for particular kinds of bets, but big surprise, kids figure out how to get around that. And the pitch of, you know, having these, macho player heroes marketing this product, clearly designed to, get the kids, and particularly boys, and young men, into this. And, you know, the fact is that the part of the brain, I think it's called the prefrontal cortex, that tells you, hey, you know, that may not be such a great idea, betting your whole future on this thing. Not such a great idea. That part doesn't fully develop until you're about 26 years old. So their market are people who basically, for relevant purposes, are, you know, not fully adults. And even though, you know, they can be in their early 20s. And, you know, that's who they're going after. And the marketing is, our concern about the marketing is, you know, part of it is, what does it take to qualify for this? We go back to what I said. You need to place $25,000 of bets within 3 months. What that means is a lot of bets, unless you're going to, you know, blow it all in one bet. Very unlikely. It means you're doing betting regularly. And that's what gets you addicted, that the regular hit, pressing the button, and it was all demonstrated, really developed by the gambling industry, the casino industry. You know, figured this all out about 30 years ago when they started, if you think about casino gambling, Agent 007 or whatever in Monte Carlo or something, you're not talking about slot machines there. You're talking about, 21 tables or roulette tables. Mm-hmm. But around 30 years ago, these tables started to be removed from casinos. They weren't making the money. And they were being replaced by slot machines. And what was the thing about the slot machines? The thing about the slot machines was the fact that you're continually getting reinforced.
Yeah. Point well taken, but slot machines are legal. I mean, if you're an adult, you can go into any casino, and there's been no casino's been sued for having them. So
right. Right. So and these are legal too. In other words, we're not saying that this is not legal. What we want to say is that, you know, designing something, because after all, when the legislatures gave the green light to sports betting, to online sports betting, they clearly were not thinking about what's going on now. They were not thinking about betting on every play in a game. Nobody was, articulating that for them. And they thought this was something going to be something pretty much like, you know, gambling at a, you know, when you're sports betting, you know, in the past, you know, you're betting on, you know, which team is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the thing people really have convictions about.
Professor Daynard, stand by for just a second. And Danny Funt, I'm going to come back to you. We just have to take this quick break. We are talking not only about the dramatic growth in sports gambling and the scandals that have come as a result of it, but now also whether it's time for further regulation of the sports betting industry. So we'll have more in just a moment. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
You're back with On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the enormous boom in sports gambling in this country, the scandals that have come as a result of that, and of course, whether or not now's the time for more regulation of gambling in athletics. I'm joined today by Richard Daynard and Danny Funt. And I did want to mention that in various times and places, the industry has made comment about the criticisms mounting against them. For example, the American Gaming Association has said its industry is, quote, one of the most highly regulated in the U.S., that legal online gaming products are for adults and the vast majority of bettors enjoy gambling as entertainment. They've also said, as the industry has grown, so has attention for money and money for problem gambling support. The same cannot be said for the vast illegal offshore gambling market, the AGA says. And then in addition, comments from the Fantasy Sports and Gaming Association include that the sector is already, quote, highly regulated. And they also note that their betting platforms have features like player self-exclusion, timeouts, and deposit limits to help encourage what they call responsible activity. Now, the question is there actually a large body of reliable data on just how much or how little gambling addiction has increased since 2018? Though that is not yet firm, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence across multiple states about its rise. For example, listen to what was reported on WJAX-TV in Jacksonville, Florida.
210,000 Florida adults have a diagnosable gambling disorder, according to the Florida Council on Compulsive Gambling. More than 820,000, just shy of 4% of Florida's total population, are considered at risk. Contacts to the state's problem gambling helpline have more than doubled since the launch of online sports betting in December. While specific numbers are not yet available, the helpline received more than 25,600 contacts between July 1st of 2021 and July of 2022.
And by the way, once again, that number for the gambling helpline is 1-800-426-2537. Danny, I mean, I said that there doesn't seem to be much robust data around the rise of gambling addiction. I mean, would you agree with that, or are there places we can look for numbers?
Yes. Congressman Paul Tonko of New York proposed legislation just last month that was seeking a crackdown on betting advertising and a number of health interventions to deal with these sorts of problems. His office said roughly 7 million people in the U.S. have some form of gambling problem. An expert I've spoken to said that pre-legalization, it was thought that roughly 1% of the population was susceptible to gambling addiction. Now that's believed to be as high as 4%. A pretty alarming number when you think about it. But what I'm curious about is beyond the people who are, you know, really at grave risk and have a serious mental health issue that requires treatment. There's certainly forms of problem betting that are far more pervasive that fall short of, you know, a clinical diagnosis. And I think that's an area that could be studied a lot more. And as that legislation I referenced calls for a Surgeon General's report to assess these type of public health challenges. And I think a lot of that remains unknown. And for proper reforms to be put in place, we need to know, you know, the scale of the problem we're dealing with, and we just don't at this point.
Yeah, you know, gambling is a thorny one for states, right? Because while they don't necessarily want to be part of an industry that creates addiction problems, on the other hand, I mean, gambling as a whole, and of course, sports betting is now a major part of it, is quite lucrative for states. I mean, there's one estimate that said in just 1 year, Americans wagered more than $93 billion on legal sports books. Actually, that's according to the industry itself. And the states received some $13 billion in taxes from gambling overall. So, you know, it's a fine line they're walking there. That leads me back to the question of tobacco, right? Because also states, you know, they tax cigarettes as well, Professor Daynard. But if memory serves, you couldn't just establish legal liability for the tobacco industry overnight, right? I mean, it was a long, years-long process. Can you just quickly remind me, again, I'm trying to see how close the corollaries are. Where did that process begin? And is it similar to your lawsuit that you brought against DraftKings for the misleading marketing practice that you're alleging?
Well, I think you can't trace it by, you know, one case after another. The cases, the tobacco cases were mostly, you know, and continue to be, cases of people who became addicted. You know, it's highly addictive, highly deadly product, you know, designed to be highly addictive. I mean, lots of analogies here that the product, you know, we have with sports gambling, we have AI there. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're gambling with them, AI is trying to figure out, okay, how do I keep you gambling? How do we maximize the amount of money we get from you? And very similar to, you know, with a much simpler, less sophisticated technology, what the tobacco companies were doing with their cigarettes. Cigarettes weren't just, you know, tobacco that had been grown and, you know, left out to dry and then wrapped up in a piece of paper. They were carefully designed products that are designed to, you know, get people hooked and, you know, keep them hooked. And that's what's happening with the, you know, with these gambling products. These, they're not, you know, what the fantasy was. They're not what, you know, people think back to was, oh, gambling, yeah, you know, I would, if you're in Boston and you're a Red Sox fan, you bet on the Red Sox winning, you know, even, you know, and then if the odds are pretty good because they weren't doing very well, then you know, then you make a little more money if they actually win. So that's, you know, that's the kind of thing people had in mind, I think, when they thought, okay, this isn't so bad. Let's bring this up to date and allow people to do it. This is a very different product.
Yeah, I mean, we should specify there's major differences, right? One is that people, let's say if they're gambling at the casino, they have to go physically to the casino, whereas we're in a world now where the casino's in your pocket with your phone, but also the degree to which they can narrowly target, right, what they're serving to users of the sports betting platforms is quite remarkable. Through this technology you're talking about, they can, they'll know the teams that you like or the types of bets you want to make, and they can even target them at certain times, right, suggest certain I don't know if they can suggest certain amounts, but they can basically serve you through the app the most enticing combination of possible bets based on what you like. It's kind of amazing. So that leads us, Danny, actually to what you had just mentioned about some action possibly on the federal level to regulate or bring sports betting under greater regulation. I should say that several states have already begun that process, including Maryland, Maine, Massachusetts, Ohio, Connecticut, I believe New York. Several of them are prohibiting college campuses or sports betting from being marketed on college campuses. Others aim to prevent deceptive marketing or targeting underage bettors. That's at the state level. But at the federal level, Congressman Paul Tonko, who represents New York's 20th congressional district, proposed the Safe Bets Act, which would regulate sports betting marketing tactics. And we spoke to him, and he says the industry targets young men in particular, something he saw for himself when Tonko recently visited patients at addiction clinics.
One of the bits of information shared by a young college student was that 5 a.m. in the morning, he'd be in the shower with his phone betting on ping pong matches in a country far away at 5 a.m. And, you know, that chasing losses syndrome impacted him. And he was at that point where he felt he needed the clinical help.
Now, the Safe Bets Act stands for Supporting Affordability and Fairness with Every Bet Act. And the bill proposes limiting advertising to times and spaces where vulnerable groups are not likely to be in the audience. Ads would also be limited to simple brand awareness instead of promoting things like bonus deals that could encourage gambling.
You know, just like you don't see people drinking in alcohol ads, we shouldn't see celebrities teaching you their favorite parlay in sportsbook advertising.
Next, the bill would limit deposits to 5 times in 24 hours. These are, of course, deposits to sports betting sites. It would also prohibit deposits by credit card, and it would require operators to conduct affordability checks before accepting excessive wagers.
Drawing back to the alcohol analogy, every state in this country has dram shop laws that prohibit the sale of alcohol to visibly intoxicated individuals. We need to have that same order of standard for sports books.
And finally, it would set standards for the use of AI and big data by sports books, who, as mentioned, currently use these technologies to do data deep dives on customer preference and behavior.
So if you know that John out there at age 20 is a huge Red Sox fan and is going to bet between the hours of 9 a.m. and noon, then you can then target and make certain that you're on their platforms in a saturated way during those hours. These practices are predatory, and they need to stop.
That's Congressman Paul Tonko, representing New York's 20th congressional district, talking about the proposed Safe Bets Act. Professor Daynard, based on what you heard, do you think that it would, if passed, it's got an uphill battle, but if passed, the Safe Bets Act could actually make significant positive change?
Oh, yeah, I've no question it would, because there's really no regulation. I mean, you have to, you know, clarify, even though the American Gaming Association, like the Tobacco Institute was always talking, oh, it's such a regulated product, such heavy government regulation, almost no regulation historically of, tobacco products, almost no regulation today of gambling products. Nice words in the statute that are given to the State Gaming Commission that then basically ends up being, you know, awed by the experts at the who they're supposed to be regulating in these gambling apps. I think Representative Tonko's bill would deal with much of the major problems. I would add one more thing if I were, in a position to just pass whatever legislation I thought was appropriate, which I would also ban the, during the game, the in-game betting, these micro-betting. And, Danny made a point which I think is incorrect, but it's a point that's always made by the American gaming industry. Notice they don't even call themselves gambling, American Gaming Industry Association. And they say that, boy, if you stop the in-game betting legally, then it will simply go offshore and illegal. That turns out, I'm told, by experts in the field, that turns out to be completely impossible, that the only way you can do this is if you have a relationship, an agreement, an ongoing working relationship with the leagues and with the experts who tell you. Danny mentioned somebody he knew who worked as a statistician for one of these companies. And what the companies do, and I think Genius Sports is the one that has most of the business, they have deals with the leagues, and they have deals with the sports apps. And they give you, they give the sports app up to the second, not up to the minute, up to the second, you know, results on, you know, what, you know, how far did the ball go and so forth and so on. And if they couldn't make a deal, they wouldn't be allowed to make a deal with one of these offshore illegal companies.
Yeah.
So that, but that's the kind of, that's the reason. This is an example of why the industry is essentially totally unregulated. Because if there's any regulation that's going to work, they just go and they lie about it. Mm. And there's nobody there to tell the to tell them any differently.
Well, I want to just clarify something for listeners that that wasn't, you know, Danny's belief that he was asserting.
Oh, it wasn't. Okay.
Right. It's definitely not Danny's belief. He was just quoting what the AGA has been saying about their industry. So, Danny, I'm not going to put that on you. But it gets us back to, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and it gets us back to how interconnected this industry is, because Professor Daynor just described some of those interconnections. I mean, we've been focusing on the sports betting industry itself, right? DraftKings, et cetera, the platforms. But we've also talked about the leagues benefiting. We've talked about sports media. We've talked about the NCAA. I mean, there's a whole ecosystem that's now very reliant on the money coming in from betting. So, Danny, in the last minute or so that we have, who else besides the industry itself do you think needs to take responsibility for minimizing the potential harms that can come with this?
Well, as enthusiastic as the leagues have been since that Supreme Court decision in getting their cut of the sports betting boom, I think they're also petrified by the idea that the integrity of games could fall into question. And you've seen just how aggressively they've punished players who've been caught betting, or they fine one player $100,000 for insinuating that a referee might be on the take when he made a call that, you know, went against the player's team. So the idea that the outcomes of the games, you know, lack integrity and there could be corruption and point shaving and game fixing, it is a major, major concern. And yeah, as much as they want to cash in on this, if their product is hard in that way, that's just a nightmare scenario. So I do think they'll guard against that as best they can.
And what about sports media?
Man, I mean, the layoffs in sports media are so devastating. I think they're looking for any windfall they can get. And that's a tough dilemma. I wish they would use all the interest that people have as an opportunity to report on this and to get readers and listeners and viewers that way rather than some of these affiliate marketing deals. Yeah, I hope there's people reporting on this. There's certainly all sorts of storylines that are just beginning to emerge.
You sound more than a little wistful, Danny. So I'm going to suggest that people actually turn to your reporting because we know that it's there. Danny Funt, a reporter who covers the sports betting boom, is with us from Fort Collins, Colorado. Thank you so much for joining us, Danny.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And Richard Daynard, professor of law and president of the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University. Professor Daynard, great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.